Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
Thanks so much for being with us. Now, a National Bureau of Economic Research working paper by OpenAI and Harvard economist David Deming took a look at 1.5 million conversations on ChatGPT. Of course, OpenAI owns them, and says that when it comes to people who are using it, there's a pretty even gender split. About 52% of people who sound like women are using it, with the rest being men. In quote, and I'm quoting verbatim here, about half of the messages are asking, which means they are asking for advice and tips. And then the rest of the use that people are using ChatGPT for is about work. Please do this task for me. And also play and imagining. And now, there are reportedly changes to what ChatGPT can advise, including legal and medical and financial provisions. Let's speak to Jan Vermeulen, editor at My Broadband. And as I said a little bit earlier on, please do send us your WhatsApp voice notes if you've got any questions, or just let us know how you are using not just ChatGPT, but any artificial intelligence. Our number is 063-688-0959. Jan, thanks for your time on Kaya Biz. Always good to have you on the show. Do we have insights into how people in South Africa are using large language models like ChatGPT, DeepSeek, and the like?
Good evening. Unfortunately not. The only people who have access to that data are the owners of the models, or the sites that process, that feed the inputs into those models. So unless they put out a report that specifically segments usage according to geography, we'll have no way of knowing exactly how South Africans are using these platforms.
But we know if we go on LinkedIn, we see those horrific AI-generated long posts, and we know that there has been quite a quick adoption, right, and of people using it for either the social media, writing in publications as well. How quick has that adoption been, and how do you think that's going to be evolving?
Yeah, so there's, I mean, anecdotally, there's definitely been huge adoption. I've spoken to software developers who are constantly flipping between different systems. So, you know, between Claude, like a lot of them are in the Microsoft ecosystem and then just use Copilot, but some of them are not. And so they flip between Claude Code and ChatGPT's latest thing. I think it's called Codex. And they kind of flick, you know, between them to find the best one. Or if one makes them angry, then they go and try new ones and see what works. But certainly, anecdotally, they're saying that it really boosts their productivity. I'm certainly frustratingly getting more, when I speak to people or sometimes ask for comment, though that doesn't happen often, or somebody wants to argue with me, they send me extracts from an AI, usually ChatGPT, and I'm like, listen, these things are still wholly inaccurate. It doesn't impress me what an AI says. I don't care what they think. I care what humans think, and I care about verified facts. But unfortunately, there's like it's kind of taken something that started off as a joke, you know, where you're on Twitter and you go, hey, @Grok, you know, is this guy speaking the truth? And then, you know, people kind of poked fun and had a bit of fun with it when Grok first launched on Twitter. That's now become like ingrained as a way to fact check. And just today, I was actually testing Grok, about an article that I'm busy working on to see whether, you know, it's any good. And it hallucinated everything. It came back with links that don't actually link to like real things, like real reports and stuff online. Like it was incredibly bad. And you know, not to knock Grok exclusively, Grok is very good in other respects, but with this particular, I was shocked at how badly it was still hallucinating these things. The others have gotten somewhat better, but still it's insidious, because the others have gotten a lot better, but there's like subtleties that are wrong in the responses that they generate that can lead people off onto a completely wrong path. Anyway, I've digressed. But these models are definitely being used in South Africa. There's been definitely adoption in personal use, and there's now increasing push from companies launching B2B type systems. So Altron has launched an AI factory and it's doing a lot of B2B stuff. Mustek has just launched a B2B thing today. And so there's definitely companies that are seeing demand inside businesses for AI systems that are trying to meet that need. But we'll have to see how that shakes out. It's still very early days.
Mm-hmm. I think there is a danger, without sounding like someone who's a Luddite, of people outsourcing their thinking and arguments, as you've spoken about, to ChatGPT. I know I also deal anecdotally with a few people who, even for basic conversations, have now, you know, even email automated how they respond. And there's something very cold and mechanical about that, because I think it's better to use your mind if you're not even using it for a basic activity. I shudder to think where we're going to be, but Jan, I think you and I are on the same page there. Now, there's this new update or new way of thinking about how OpenAI or how ChatGPT is not going to give legal, psychological, or financial advice. Can you give us insight into that?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. It seems to really just go back to a lawsuit that was brought against OpenAI in August after the suicide of a teenager called Adam Rain. So his parents brought a lawsuit against OpenAI in California, and they alleged that essentially his use of ChatGPT, he was already it seems like he was already thinking dark thoughts, but then ChatGPT kind of pushed him over the edge.
Yes,
they allege that it validated his most harmful and self-destructive thoughts. So it seems that ChatGPT or OpenAI is essentially responding to that. And it's unfortunate that it takes someone dying for companies to start responding to this kind of stuff. It's an interesting conundrum because invariably what happens is, as the guardrails on these platforms increase, it actually weakens them for general use. For people who might not be having those thoughts, who know full well that they should not be trusting an artificial intelligence for health or medical advice or legal advice, it makes it a much worse product for us. And so people who have access to who ultimately have access to these services without guardrails will have a tremendous advantage over those of us who are limited to the ones with guardrails. But what do you do? If you have people out there, and especially he might have been a perfectly reasonable, healthy young man otherwise, who was just struggling with thoughts of suicide, as many teenagers do during that difficult time of their lives, and this thing just kind of gave that extra push when what he needed was someone to pull him back off the edge. It's a tricky one to deal with, because of the large ramifications that are at play here. In short, that's where I see this thing's origins are, and why they're doing what they're doing. There's also been many famous cases of lawyers around the world, in the United States and in South Africa, using large language models and getting in big trouble with the judge because it hallucinated all the stuff.
And I think it speaks to the point that I don't think there's anything wrong with using artificial intelligence if you are so inclined, but do not outsource your thinking. So if ChatGPT is giving you a case in South Africa, go and look up the case. Go on to Safely, go on to Jutastat, go on to LexisNexis, whatever you use, look up that case. Read the case, see that what it says the principle of the case is actually there. And I think that's where, people, when you're outsourcing, you don't do that. But I would like to bring someone else into the conversation. Frank McGregor, Gibbs faculty member and head of financial wellness at Nedbank. Frank, very good evening. Also, always so good to have you on Kaya Biz. Jan and I are having a conversation about outsourcing to artificial intelligence. It's not always a bad thing. Take us through how you think people are using it when it comes to the financial space and what you would say to someone who is using it for that purpose.
Good evening, and thank you for having me on your show. Good evening to KIABiz listeners. It's what an interesting discussion. I caught the tailwinds of that discussion. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question, I would say three things to someone who is using ChatGPT for financial advice. And I'm saying that as a heavy user of ChatGPT. So I have early adopter, I've used it heavily right from the beginning. Mm. So the first thing, and we kind of know it, and it even tells us, you know, at the bottom when we've done our prompt and we get an answer, it tells us ChatGPT may make mistakes or there may be errors, right? That is important for reasons mentioned by your previous guest, that there are many instances across the world of, for example, lawyers getting into trouble. I mean, we even had a consulting firm, I think in Australia, one of the consulting firms, they had to repay back the money that they charged the Australian government because of hallucinations from ChatGPT, not necessarily ChatGPT, from AI that they had used. So any user, you have to stop and tell yourself, why would the developer of this product warn me that there may be mistakes in information that you're about to consume, right? Mm-hmm. So number one, in other words, what I'm saying to your listeners is we need to take that serious. It's not being put there just because, right? It's being put for a reason. Mm. Then we move to the second, perhaps more important reason, right? Say you get over that. You're okay. You accept that there may be mistakes. One of the things that has come in AI research over the last few years or so, particularly this year, is the idea that particularly ChatGPT, the leader, is that the bot seems to is moved to wanting to please the users. There's actually a term for that. Yes. But, you know, it's kind of telling you what you want to know. Right?
Yes.
And it gives you this flowery language. It never really disagrees with you. It's always asking, what else can I do for you, right? And so when we take that picture and we overlay it on finances, where you need someone to tell you you are not spending in line with your budget, or your entertainment is high, or whatever category of your budget, it could be better. If you are asking for advice and you are being told what you want to hear, what is the chance of behavior shift? I see that as the biggest risk. That when we see an individual financial planner, they're in our corner, they ask us the difficult questions, and they make us commit to change, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the second point. Then my final point would be the fact just around emotions, right? That money is quite an emotional topic. And so when you are sharing what's going on with your finances with the financial plan, a human financial plan, you know, you are on the recipient of non-judgment, you are the recipient of empathy, this happens, you are not the only person doing it, you know, compassion. I find in some of my engagement with ChatGPT, you know, the systems, and of course research also tells us that they are not at that level of human, you know, kind of compassion and human empathy. So those three really for me say, you can start a rough check about what you think you want to do with your finances. Mm-hmm. Do not implement anything at this point in time without checking with a qualified financial planner, that if things go wrong, by the way, you've got recourse.
Okay. Jan, thank you so much for your time on KIABiz. We're going to let you go. We'll just speak to Frank a little bit longer. Frank, I know you're speaking about, you know, if you've got recourse with a financial advisor.
Yes.
I was speaking to a young lady the other day and who said to me, oh, how do you go about actually getting a financial advisor? So sometimes there is a sense that financial advisors are people who are very removed from people's day-to-day realities. Whereas if I can open up my phone or my computer and I can speak to someone and get a sense of where I'm going, that might be easier and less intimidating than finding a Dr. Frank.
Absolutely. And there, you're offering us two reasons, right? Deep insights into why, for example, we've just completed collecting data for the 2025 Netfin Health Monitor, where we just track how South Africans are dealing with money. We were surprised because we had a question on use of AI. Would you use AI for advice? Are you using AI? And both those questions had about 7 in 10 people saying yes, which is quite a surprise for us. But your point is so valid that the use of AI for financial advice in particular, there's no doubt in my mind that it's driven by exactly the point you have made, that often when I also engage with young people, it just looks like, I don't know where to find this person called a financial advisor. Even if I find them, how do I know I'm going to connect well with them? How do I know their qualifications? How do you know how I must pay them? Is it free? Right? So you've got lots of unknowns. Whereas ChatGPT is in your pocket. So you can see why it's easier then to just default to what's in your pocket, right? And then the second thing is certain people, they just feel finances are so, they're just emotional, they're private. I don't want to talk to a human being about that. That's the other reason that drives them there. Having said that, I think it's important to remind our listeners that we can walk into any branch of a bank, Nedbank, Standard Bank, any bank, Capitec, you'll be able to find a financial advisor. The same applies to insurance companies. And there's also another group, independent financial advisors. Two, we can figure out what are their qualifications, what do they specialize on, have they ever been in trouble with the law, how long has they been a financial advisor, by requesting that individuals, when we are engaging with them, to give us their ID number, because we're saying render a service to me. We go on the website of the FSCA, Financial Sector Conduct Authority. We punch that number in. We will get all the knowledge we need about these specific individuals. And so we can hunt for a few and check who is likely to connect with you, and then you can work. Hence that recourse that I was speaking, that that person is now giving regulated financial advice. If things go wrong, they're able to go to their institution first and ultimately to the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. So that's how you find them and check their qualification. But ease of access, you're right, it's in the pocket, therefore I'll just ask an AI bot.
Frank Makwege, Gibbs faculty member and head of financial wellness at Nedbank. Thank you so much for your time on Kaya Business.
It's great. Thank you. What a fantastic topic. Thank you for having
Always great having you on the show. Remember, you can tweet us at Kaya on air, and you can use the hashtag Kaya Biz. Also, please do drop us a WhatsApp 063-688-0959, or if you'd like to call in 086-000-0959. It's time for a short break. When we come back, we'll be talking about the 30 billion rand in Black Friday sales. Do you still get excited about it? Did you even know Black Friday is coming up? Do let us know.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.